Okay, we have 10 minutes for question and answers. That's really interesting. I think an interesting connection between the two presentations as well. We have a roving mic somewhere, I think. Yeah, over here.
Wondering if you find that there's any attempt or any kind of public direction towards educating about, like, for opening and more transparency, I guess in both your cases, just letting people, is there any attempt from, I guess, the public institutions to, cooperate when you try and open things up and bring them up to debate, or is it mostly you don't really get?
Well, I don't think, and I think there are, of course, big medical and other universities that do that. But one of the things that I am astounded at in Ireland, if we have no, at a very formal level, and I do believe it's like literacy, people need to become socially and politically intellectually literate. There are no critical social scientific disciplines taught in our schools. So people learn to be atheoretical, to be anti-intellectual, and in fact to have no concepts. It's like I said, having some ideas about justice, but you have, they're all thrown in a bundle in your drawer because you have no wardrobe and you've no hangers in which to locate them. So you can't find them when you go looking for them. There is no concepts, there are no ideas. Like, listen, 25 years ago, in fact it's almost 30 years ago, three or four of us were Sociological Association, Political Studies, and a number of other bodies, anthropological I think there were at the time, tried to get sociology, politics, and kind of critical disciplines incorporated into second level education. We were defeated by all kinds of interests, including, and my dad at the time, teacher unions, who did not want their subjects to be threatened. So let's not always talk about these things as if, you know, it's all this big brother out there. It isn't. It's often our sister or our own brother. So, but the government at the time was here, but we still haven't got it. How can children learn to think critically if they never learn a concept? They, like, we know women's studies, equality studies, disability studies, innovation studies. The whole world is full of new disciplines, new ways of thinking, but we never study. So how, read the Irish Times, I just find it fascinating. In fact, I close it, no disrespect to the arts, but I never see a book that is published, like, for example, my colleague in UCD, Duncan Devine, if it doesn't mind me taking some, published an excellent book on immigration and all the problems in education in Ireland, never reviewed by the Irish Times. But there would be some book that is from 17th century dinosaur somewhere in France that would be reviewed by the Irish Times. Because nobody thinks that the social sciences or the political issues matter, unless you have a personal friend or they happen to notice you. So I don't think there is an intellectual void, and I don't think it is because we actually think that social justice issues really, we don't need to think about them, you know, we don't need those concepts. I don't think that's where people have to intervention. That's my
Well, Kathleen said at the outset of her presentation that youth work, youth projects are, whether you like it or not, for working class communities. And that actually is part of the problem. It's absolutely true, it's unarguable that even though there's a rhetoric of youth work being good for everybody, potentially valuable for all young people, in practice the state only funds it in working class communities. And that is related to the problem, albeit indirectly. Youth work is, good youth work practice is much more highly political than most formal educational practice, not just in terms of the substance of what goes on, but in terms of the approach that is taken by the people engaged, and the workers, for example, have an entirely different way of relating to young people, of educating young people, in inverted commas. And so if more young people had the opportunity to engage in good youth work practice, it could potentially change their attitude to a whole range of things. But in fact, youth work practice is very tightly constrained. It only happens in certain places where the obstacles that confront those practicing it and the young people who are availing of it and benefiting from it are so enormous that it takes a huge amount of time and effort for it to change things, for it to change material circumstances. And yet it does make headway. It does have a transformative impact on young people's lives. But for it to have a sufficiently transformative impact at a societal level, you know, it's I have no illusions about that happening any day soon because of the obstacles that it's confronted with. But I do think it would have the potential to have such an impact if it were more widely practiced. Whereas formal education is entirely counter-revolutionary in every sense. Apart from anything else, it individualizes everything, and so everybody's up against everybody else all the time.
I'd actually like to make a comment added to that question rather than a question. And I would argue that because the location of this kind of critical education has been mainly in youth work and in adult education and in informal local development projects, the consistent undermining of these projects in terms of funding has in fact contributed to a reduction of this kind of education. And furthermore, where education has been informally supported through what was the DECs, the increasing insistence on certification frameworks has given the state a possibility to control the content of what is delivered in these courses much more closely. So I think rather than, in answer to your question, in my opinion, the whole question of illuminating what we've been talking about here has been undermined rather than strengthened in the past decade.
So you concur with that?
Well, I think it's really interesting, that notion of the moral imagination that you raised at the end, Kathleen. I think, the ways in which I think political or political literacy as it's taught within youth programs has been so sort of, if you like, siloed as well, and seen as something separate and exceptional. You know, in a sense, Morris, you raised this issue as well. But I'm really intrigued by this kind of transition in terms of language, both in terms of public policy and in terms of policies around youth work. And I suppose it's kind of interesting for some of the audience here, without being too sort of prescriptive about it, but what role can the arts play in terms of connecting up some of these issues? And is there potential there for something more radical to emerge?
Well, I'm thinking back to some work that was done in Rialto some years ago, and it's part of a strain of practice that has run through Rialto's history of a kind of an ironic you might call it a reverse discourse that takes place whereby the young people and the youth workers in collaboration with artists have, among other things, taken the negative labels that get applied to them and used them subversively to create works of art, pieces of art. I'm thinking way back to, it was in the late 90s, the Who Are These Scumbags conference. Do you remember that?
Scumbags,
Tow Rags, and
Plankers. Yeah.
So that kind of, that's an example of how youth work can be used, and arts approaches within youth work can be used to raise people's awareness of the operations of language itself in ways that are disempowering. But again, it's not something that sufficient attention is paid to. Language is we're generally educated or trained to regard language as something neutral that simply expresses things and communicates things, but it doesn't help to shape and reproduce things. But you can do good youth work and good arts work in a way that exposes those processes.
I was just going to say, I mean, I think from an arts point of view, a lot of arts funding for work in communities, one of the very difficulties is it's short term. So artists become part of that precarious labour that you described, where you're interested in these issues, you want to engage, but the invitations are often short term, and that's a lot of artists' experience of trying to get in and do things. Often, and I remember this very specific conversation where I had one day a long time ago, as an artist, your funding is often based on the status of your collaborators as disadvantaged. Mm-hmm. And we decided to open that up and talk about that, and that it led to a whole project about power and about young people exploring what it means to go to a youth project, which by its nature is for marginalised young people, and so getting into that. But so like those kinds of conversations aren't often, there's often not time for them because of the funding structure of the arts. So I suppose maybe just, yeah, that's just a comment.
I think that the arts, including music, have a huge role to play in creating imagination as a new language. I wish, now that I were here today, I think it should lead to new collaborations. Because I think, you know, I'm sure many here are familiar with theories of multiple intelligences. You know, knowing the world spatially and visually is a different way of knowing, and even knowing it musically through the medium of sound is very different and touches on issues that language can't reach. So from that point of view, I think the arts are human. But we need to create new collaborations, perhaps between the likes of NCAD and communities and universities. But one of the small ones, I had with a nameless but well-known community activist with me meeting, we were talking about how the need to create a new space between, if you like, communities, higher education, community groups of all kinds who are working for justice, but also others that are powerful, like the trade unions and interested political agents. We need to create new intellectual spaces, but to take the point that you made there, the problem is, of course, that those spaces are very challenging to power. There's nobody is, and I think that's what's happened, is when the community groups were funded and were very wonderful and did fantastic work, they were challenging power. And that's precisely why they were closed down. And that's precisely why the Equality Authority had its funding cut when they got rid of Neil Cromie. If it was ineffective, he'd still be there. So I think, you know, these are fights. I hate to use the metaphor of war, but I hate to tell you that you're delusional if you think it isn't a fight. You know, nothing is given, power is never given to you, it's never handed to you. You fight for it, and you organize it, you know, and you do have to organize. And we have to create new ideas and go and find whatever blessed European or other funding that there is to let it happen. And force them, like I see you did here in the past, in the youth sector, to do things. But I do think we need to reignite that energy, because this morning I was with another research student of mine, who's a great musician, and she was telling me of all the imaginative things that are being done in music in South America, in terms of politics and everything, which we don't have here at all. So I think there is a lot. I really do believe. I know I'm ignorant myself, but I do know I'm ignorant. You know.
But anyway, so we're going to continue the conversation because time is ticking. And some of the issues you raised, I think, are now going to move into the next section, which is into practice and how practice itself on the ground and also supports for practice can facilitate some of these, hopefully, innovative collaborations. Hopefully, we'll see. Thank you very much, Maura.